Hey, this is Brian Beeler, and thanks for tuning in to the Storage Review podcast. This week, I've got a conversation with Kristen Brown. Kristen's been with Intel for a long time, and she's part of the NUC team there. And I wanted to talk with Kristen just to learn a little bit more about what they're doing with the NUC platforms. What's the future look like? Can these supplant servers? And we get into a lot of these topics. And it's funny, Tom recently put up a piece about running ESXi on the brand new NUC 9. And that was one of our most popular pieces. I think it was number 5 or 6 from May. So we really wanted to feed the hunger for content like this and have this great conversation. Plus, Kristen went to LSU, and Joe Burrow is coming up from LSU to hopefully save the Bengals this season. So anyway, we've got a great conversation around tiny PCs, and really think you'll enjoy this. On the podcast today, we have Kristen Brown from Intel. Kristen, thanks for joining us from the Pac Northwest.
Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. And before we get too far down the road, tell us a little bit about what you do there and what your role is with Intel.
Sure. So I'm the product line manager for the commercial side of the NUC team. We're split into two pieces, one that focuses more on the gaming and the consumer side, and one that focuses more on the commercial side where, you know, people are using hardware in order to make their livelihood work for them.
Okay. So it's funny because we interact with the NUCs on the I don't know. We don't really compartmentalize like that, but we like to think about them as very versatile tools. In fact, I was looking at our web stats for the month yesterday, and our number one article is a piece that Tom did for us on the new NUC 9 as an ESXi host. And that's really interesting and fits more with your commercial side. But at the same time, a couple weeks before that, the number one post was his initial review just on the platform on its own as a really flexible workstation replacement. In some cases, I guess you guys would view that as. So we're seeing a ton of interest in that. And part of it, of course, is the work from home thing. But I think there's also a lot of home labbers, of people that want to experiment, of people that even can make little hyperconverged infrastructures out of these things. They're insanely flexible, which I guess is one of your hallmarks with this particular technology.
Yeah, and I think it's a hallmark, if you will, of all the NUCs, right? We really target being able to give our customers an opportunity to go and explore how they want to use that compute in their environment. But to your point, the Quartz Canyon or the NUC 9 Pro workstation is something we're really excited about. It's a new concept for us, kind of leaving that smaller 4x4 behind and getting into a true workstation with a Xeon processor, ECC, in a small, you know, less than 5 liter form factor.
Yeah, it's the capabilities, and especially when you start talking about GPU and some of those things that the Creative Pros and others need. The NUC started out, this is going to sound awful. I was trying to come up with a better word. Started out kind of like a toy, right? The very first ones were, they were inexpensive. They were easy to approach, and they you could put a little M.2 drive in there and be off and running. So I don't mean to diminish its capabilities, but what you're doing now with Quartz Canyon is really powerful type stuff with NVMe storage and things like that that far exceed where you started with the platform. How long has it been? Gosh, it feels like 8 or 9 years at this point.
I was going to say, yeah, it's been quite a few years. And actually, you know, it's been a really fun journey for the NUC team, largely driven by our channel customers because of the fact that we have really deep touch points with them. We get feedback from our customers frequently, and we hear from them, you know, hey, here are the things that we need to see in a product to go and adopt it. One of the things we heard with the workstation product that we're talking about today was, hey, we love the concept, but it's got to be something that I can put on the desk, and we don't believe you can do it. You know, we think it's going to be loud and horrible, and, you know, no thank you, but we'd love it if you could do it. And so we took the feedback, and we went off to see what we could do there. And we actually originally envisioned it as just a traditional L6. But when we showed them the architecture we were looking at, they were like, hold on, can we get just that element thing inside of it, so that we can go and envision our own systems, you know, different ecosystem partners that are going to create different form factors that take advantage of the computing and the ease of upgrade, but not taking, you know, just the L6 that we're creating. So we've kind of offered both choices, but it's been a really fun journey. I've been with the team just shy of 2 years now, and it's been a really fun journey hearing the customer and being able to respond to their asks.
Well, what, because there's other stuff out there. There've been mini PCs for ages that have tried to go after similar needs. What was it from a design perspective that was the most challenging, or that your customers were asking for? Because it does surprise me a little bit that they'd be so worried about sound, but what other concerns were there going into this?
So, their biggest concern was sound, because they wanted it to be quiet on the desktop, right? Like on the desktop, not something that they shoved on the ground and kind of hid away from the world.
Right.
The other areas for concern that they had were getting a true workstation. So, you know, hey, if you're going to give me a workstation product, don't just give me one of those sort of workstations, which it seems they've, you know, had experiences with. Mm-hmm. And so they really wanted to see that, you know, Xeon, the ECC memory tape capabilities, and a product that they could also take and upgrade over time, right? And that ability to opt into different graphics cards. One of the things we did here, you know, kind of right as we were launching was, hey, we are concerned about the fact that it's a short graphics card. And so, you know, we confirmed with the NVIDIA part that we were getting the right graphics for the workstation partners. And then on the gaming side of the house, we've actually gone off and partnered with different companies to get full length chassis, as well as working with ASUS to get the smaller graphics card as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. From a storage perspective, did you get anything there, or are most of the customers for this particular product, you know, content with what you've got available to them?
The customers wanted flexibility with regards to storage, and that was what we tried to deliver for them, was that ability to kind of pick and choose what they needed to have.
Do you see, so when you think about this, do you view this as a platform that now branches off into a number of different things in the future, or like, just how do you view this space going forward and where Intel wants to be?
So for me in the commercial side of the house, this is a platform that we continue to execute on, really driving that workstation solution and giving the customers a, you know, an iteration, you know, in the next few years that gives them the next compute capabilities, but continues to give them that flexibility around how they want to design their system from an L6 up. For the gaming side of the house, the team is often driving, you know, a deeper integration with various ecosystems partners to be able to take advantage of that easy upgrade ability that, you know, gamers want to have that last, you know, latest and greatest components.
Sure. Well, that's always the challenge on the console side. It's so hard to get into the pieces inside of an Xbox or PlayStation. Some of them you can upgrade your SSD or do some other things there, but there's definitely a limitation on where you can go on the GPU side and the other components. So certainly having that flexibility in a small case like this is pretty cool. Do you see, I know, you know, you're obviously targeting this to the business use cases, but it's so small. Is portability a factor at all in any of the deployments you're seeing?
So I think it's an interesting conversation, because one of the things that, you know, if you think about where we are now of the, well, now you're working from home, maybe we're going to go back and do a part, you know, part-time work from home, part-time work at the office kind of environment. It may work really well for those small, medium businesses that can't afford to, you know, outfit their employees with multiple systems, but want to be able to have a powerful workstation on the desk, regardless of where they're working from. And it is small, it is light. It is something you could easily, you know, put in a backpack and take back and forth to the office or at home, depending on what your work week looked like and, you know, how unlocked your society is at that point.
Right. And how are you thinking, or how are your customers thinking about these solutions versus more traditional thin client type workflows? you know, certainly you're driving more power in the system to the desktop, which is fine, in a less complex, more traditional end user computing sort of way. But you know, thin clients coming along too in terms of the capabilities and even GPUs back at the data center. Is it an either or kind of thing, or do you see some environments where they're doing both some VDI and systems like this?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is more, for us, our customers are more on the desktop right now. And as we continue to see folks moving to the cloud and being able to take advantage of that, we do think that this fits nicely into a hybrid environment for them as well.
Yeah, it certainly checks off a lot of the boxes. And now, you know, I know we've talked a lot about professional work, but we went ahead and installed ESXi on ours and started playing around with it more of in a home lab standpoint. So tell me, because I'm sure you hear from those guys all the time, what's been the feedback on the new platform from a tinkering and home lab and testing, test dev even sort of modality? How's that going?
The feedback's been really strong. People are excited about that. That option to tinker, as you say. I think it's something that the Nook in general, that platform has been really known for, is facilitating folks that want to do different experiences at home and really give them that platform that allows for that flexibility to do, we'll go with it, the tinkering.
Yes, the tinkering. Well, you know, it's funny because we see on the 4x platform, we've even seen HCI guys purpose their software on those systems, like Scale Computing, who you may know, does a little hyperconverged infrastructure on those with 2 terabyte SSDs inside. I mean, it's neat that they could take their stack and put it on there, which is pretty standard open source stuff. But yeah, it's cool to think about that running, you know, POS system and some little little retail outlet or something like that.
Yeah, we're excited about the different opportunities that Scale is exploring. We're actually meeting with them later today, so it's funny that you mentioned them.
Funny timing, yeah. Yeah, they've got an office in Indy, just a little while up the street from us, and you know, we started to do some work with them a while back. We've done some VDI work with them with LeoStream and some other partners, but they you know, they've got a neat solution that's really not necessarily just on the NUCs. They use full size servers too, but really designed to get to the needs of SMBs and those that are a little more budget constrained that want to get off of, you know, some of the more traditional enterprise stacks. But yeah, just their little 3-node thing of NUCs stacked together is pretty cool. Who else is doing fun things with NUCs that you're aware of?
There's a lot of folks that use NUCs in different ways, and it's interesting to see the different ways that they use it. As you know, we offer NUCs in a board type configuration, so you'll often see folks putting it into industrial environments, robotics, things like that. Tons of companies using it in digital displays, you know, tucking them behind displays. And we've actually recently introduced a quote unquote rugged product line that's really targeted at helping folks be able to put those digital compute systems behind the display and forget about them, right? So IP50 mm-hmm. keeps the dust out, allows them to keep working well. We're also seeing really good uptake in collaboration. So running the Zoom and Teams meetings. And I suspect as we come out of this environment, we'll see a lot more hybrid work environments where folks are working from home and from the office. So I see a world in which collaboration tools become an even stronger importance, not just, you know, as we are each in our homes, but, you know, in the future where some people are in the office and some people are in the homes, and we're trying to make sure that both sides of the experience are solid.
So, yeah, we started talking a little bit about future development, and I know there's only so much you can talk about or want to talk about there. But is it the plan then, do you think, to stay with the small and the large form factors going forward? Do you think there'll be many more? Is this a portfolio that you think is going to continue to grow in terms of the flexibility of the size and capability of the offerings?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So yes, we're definitely going to keep the traditional 4x4 running. That's been our our bread and butter since the beginning of time, as you mentioned, when it was a toy. Now it's a lot more robust.
That was affectionate, though. It sounded mean the way you said it.
We do i7 vPros now, all the way down to the Celeron still. So, we've got the solutions that meet all the needs for customers in that 4x4 environment. Excitingly, we've started doing the 5-liter, workstation products. I think we are going to keep developing that. We're looking at, the next gen CPUs that we're going to put into it. We're actually meeting later today to solidify our POR there. So we're continuing to stay in that form factor, as well as continuing to take advantage of that, industry standard PCIe connections so that, things don't get weird out in time. And one of the things that we've learned is don't do proprietary connectors. We're continuing to keep that, agnostic competency for our team, because it really helps us as well as our customers to transition. And then I don't know if you've seen, but we've also started playing with a kind of a next gen around compute elements. So it's going to be the U series having, again, non-proprietary, because we've learned our lesson, connectors, but really allowing us to get into just kind of any form factor you want, which is kind of the fun thing. We're looking at OPS environments for the elements. We're looking at new desktops, new notebooks, keyboards, video projectors. There's just a ton of interest in the ecosystem to try different things. And a lot of the times the hurdle is, being able to do a lot of that motherboard work, and for them to be able to take advantage of things like the Compute Element H series, as well as Compute Element U series, they're getting this, opportunity to take advantage of a non-proprietary connector. A lot of the R&D being taken and, on by us, and then we're giving them options on how to go and build their own systems that they want to go build. I think, in the next 5 years, we're going to see so many different companies that have in the past been like, well, I wish I had something that could do this, but the burden from an R&D standpoint is too high for me to go and customize, to seeing people say, oh, the burden is, a third, a quarter, zero to what it was in the past. I'm going to go and create this thing that I really wished that I could have that would have streamlined my businesses, but I hadn't been able to get over that R&D hurdle in the past.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. As you were speaking, I was thinking about what lets Intel have the flexibility to go make something like this Quartz Canyon PC that maybe the more traditional systems providers, tower providers, just haven't been able to do or haven't wanted to do. And like I said before, we've certainly seen plenty of micro PCs, but there's typically a lot of compromise to get to that point. What do you think it is? Is it a culture thing? Is it just a sheer will that's giving you guys the ability to go do this? Because it's, on one hand, it's super cool, it's neat. On the other hand, it's competitive with the other brands, Dell, HPE, whomever else that buy your components. So it's always sort of, depends on who you're talking to, but there could be some uncomfortableness, especially if you guys start getting really aggressive with putting things like, keyboards and displays on these things and making them customizable notebooks. So, when the trend has gone totally the other way, most people can't even access the drives in their systems anymore.
True. So it is an Intel's DNA, right, to go and innovate. And that's, I think, a big part of the driver. And as I mentioned earlier, it's also what the customers are asking for. So, we really focus on serving the underserved in the channel. And, what they're coming back to us and telling us is, hey, when we have to buy MOQs, in the thousands, 10,000s, we can't do anything, right? We can't sell to the channel customers that we have. And so we're not meeting the needs of the customers. And so one of the reasons that SPG exists is, the main reason is to serve that underserved channel, right? And so we are off making products that other companies aren't as interested in serving those customers. So we're trying to help them.
But you still need the volumes to make that go work, right? Because this is certainly not a nonprofit effort to go solve problems.
It's true. They still pay me. no, but the channel is made up of thousands of companies, right? And so the way that the channel works is very different than the way that you think of like the MNCs who have a few major customers who buy, you know, in large quantities. The channel buys in units of, well, the quartz can, you can buy in a unit of two. So mm-hmm. if I'm in the channel, I can go buy it with a unit of two, and then I can sell it to two customers, and I'm quote unquote safe, right? I haven't over-indexed my budget. I can afford to spend that and then continue to keep buying in small increments. Whereas, you know, big companies are looking to buy in big increments, and that's the world in which they sell. We sell directly into the channel through disties and are able to support those really small MOQs that they're looking for.
So it's interesting because a lot of what you're talking about parallels what you guys do on the server side too. And I don't even know if everybody knows this, but Intel has a server board and server chassis and a whole solution that can be sold into the market. We see it most commonly from data on. So we do a lot of Azure Stack HCI work with them, and they send these complete Intel solutions. In fact, we've got one sitting in the lab right now that's shrink wrapped that we need to take apart. That's got, it's, you know, Intel server board, storage, CPU. In fact, it's even got the new 15 terabyte QLC drives in it. So those are nice. Pretty sweet. Yeah, yeah. So when you think about where you're growing these boxes and where you're going and where the server business is, there's got to be some points of potential overlap there, or at least closing the gap a little bit. Not that you're going to replace the server business with these, but as we talked, Scale Computing and many others are looking at these boxes to be able to solve their problems. Is there a relationship there, but I'm sure there is, between the two groups, or is there any sort of symbiosis that can occur or does occur between what you're doing and what the server team's doing?
There's probably more, honestly, that we could do to tighten up the relationship. I am at the highest level familiar with the fact that we have that business over there, but we don't sit down and go through our, you know, roadmaps together and think about price stacks and such like that, as far as like, hey, here's a gap we should go try to fill. It's a good conversation for us to have internally.
Yeah, because I just think there's a lot of potential. And one of the things, you know, when Tom and I were talking, he did the review on the NUC 9 that we were talking about, is how far away is this thing from needing or really being able to benefit from something like 10 gig NICs on board, or even 2.5? We're starting to see that pop up a little more in the home and SMB. Mm-hmm. And once you start talking about high-speed networking, now you're really opening up the capabilities. Is 10G still a little too expensive for this price point? What held you back there from a technology or cost perspective?
We didn't think it was the time this time, yeah. But it is something that we will explore for our next generations.
So likely a 2.5, and then do you think 10 gig ever makes sense in that, or is that too far afield from the target?
So it would be our intention to listen to our customers. If they come back, you know, after we give them 2.5 and they say, hey, that was great, but you know, 10 is the target. Then we'd certainly take that feedback on board, because we truly are listening to what the customers are asking for and working to deliver it.
Okay. What about, so we talked a little bit about storage. Is there, and has there been a need or much interest in trying to get more drives inside the little 4x4 guy? Is that something that's even possible, or are you happy with where you are on that?
We've been looking at some ways to potentially do that. It's still in flight, but watch this space. Maybe we'll get there.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, we could just make it a 5x5 and slam a couple more M.2s in there. Do you feel committed to that 4x4? Is that a big deal in terms of your design?
You know, it's funny you ask. We've asked our customers that same thing, because with Choco Canyon, which is a Celeron fanless solution that we came out with recently, we did have to expand that 4x4 slightly, because without the fan, we couldn't cool it without a bit bigger footprint. And so we've gone back to them and said, hey, we know you guys really like 4x4, but what do you think about this form factor? Is this something you would like if we give you more things with it? And they've said, we really, really, really like that 4x4. Why don't you stay there for a while longer? But we have actually gone back and asked because we did have some thoughts of like, hey, maybe we would want to add some different capabilities that would require us to grow the form factor. But to date, the customer feedback has been, don't mess with a good thing, stay 4x4. And so that's what we do.
Is that just an emotional thing, do you think, that it's been around for so long that they kind of know it and understand it? Because
a little bit of that. I think the reality of it is also they've created carriers, things that connect to the back of systems, places that they go. They've got their IO lined out. So that's another place that they're like, hey, we want the IO this way because it's, we've structured the place that the Nook goes such that mm-hmm. we plug this in, this in, this in. If you move them when we replace the old with the new, you're going to break something in how we've structured it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are there custom accessories that I'm sure there are that have been created? I think back to the XServe days in the data center where people had these trays designed for the servers to sit in. And if you move a port, now all these trays don't work anymore because there was a port that was a millimeter perfect. So do you have any sense of like some neat accessories that people have built just for these things, for their use cases?
Yeah, so I don't know if it's neat, but definitely functional. So we've know that some of the collaboration partners have created a chassis, for lack of a better word, that holds the cables in place so that, a user doesn't come along and accidentally dislodge, while they're using the collaboration tools, the cabling, right? Because that would be a not so awesome experience. If you think about going in a collaboration space and somebody's unplugged the system, that wouldn't be great. So there's things like that that are holding things in place. There's also people that have created their own, instead of using the Versa mounting, they've created their own, goes behind the screen solutions. Mm-hmm. We've also got folks that have created kiosks that have a little home inside of the kiosk for the Nook, and all the cabling is set up that way. So if we were to start changing stuff around, it would break how that system is set up, and then they'd have to go do a bunch of retooling, which is obviously not something we want them to have to do.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, some of the use cases that you're highlighting have been the ground of industrial computing for so long, and I think it's funny because I was just talking with someone on LinkedIn yesterday about how far IoT and edge type computing devices have come. They used to be so monolithic, so expensive, not flexible. It would have the ports you needed, which back then serial and maybe even parallel ports and things like that built in, but they were just weren't good. They were functional, but they weren't good, and you couldn't do a lot with them. And sure, they could withstand heat, and it could rain on them and they'd be fine, but they weren't from a computing perspective, they weren't good. And so we've seen this this resurgence in the value of edge computing. One, I think, is obviously a big trend, but also wanting to drive more flexible solutions into these spots. So you talk about things like digital signage that used to be, were thousands of dollars worth of panels because they had to have all this stuff built in. It was all proprietary, and as we know, proprietary typically means expensive and cumbersome. And now you're talking about for a couple hundred bucks being able to put this thing into a little enclosure with a off the shelf display, touch screen or whatever you need, or keyboard and mouse, and being able to have that solution that's effective in what it does, is customizable to meet that vendor's needs from a deployment and management standpoint, and is relatively inexpensive. I mean, it's a great place to be. So it's neat to see you guys finding these industrial type use cases, or more professional edge use cases, are pretty cool. One of the things I think that doesn't get talked about enough with the 9 specifically is the vPro situation. Do people even know that the out of band management exists or can exist in that system?
I think they know, but I don't know that they take advantage of it as much as they could. And that's definitely one of the things that, my marketing team owns helping people to get more savvy on, as well as, you know, getting our technical sales guys out there to help them get it set up and running, because there is a learning curve to using the out-of-band and the AMT capabilities correctly.
Yeah, well, I just, as I was listening to you talk about all these variety of use cases, like, you know, they may not be using the latest Quartz Canyon for that, but if they do, having that flexibility and remote access is pretty strong. And again, starts to bridge the gap between a more enterprise-y solution versus a more end-user solution. What do you have any insight on the drive to put vPro in there and to support that? Or, I mean, obviously it's can come with the right infrastructure and CPU, but I'm just curious about how much of it was a concerted thought or effort from your group to make that available.
Yeah. So as I mentioned at the beginning, I run the commercial side of the house. And from our standpoint, a big part of being commercial is making sure that we give folks that option to be able to choose the vPro capabilities, because we see them obviously at Intel as critically important. And as we see Nooks deployed into their ecosystems, often they are headless devices, right? Obviously, Quartz likely to have a head attached to it more often than not, but nonetheless, you know, being able to have somebody remote into your system and help you out with a problem that you might be having is, you know, just amazing. If you've ever been,
well, yeah, and there's a lot of flexibility too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I was just thinking, we were just setting up a little server yesterday, installing TrueNAS on it, and it happened to have out-of-band management on it. It just makes life so much easier from a support standpoint to be able to, like, if you've got these you know, survey stations set up all over the country in malls, well, not malls anymore, nobody goes to the mall, in outdoor locations where you can safely distance, and one of them's throwing a problem, instead of having someone have to be dispatched there to deal with it, now you may not be able to fix everything, but you can fix a lot by even just being able to roll the system over remotely.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. Even one truck roll, you know, pretty much pays for the vPro solution option versus, you know, having your IT guy go out and fix the problem. As well as, you know, it can phone home and tell you it has a problem, so you can be much more proactive than, you know, oh, somebody happened to be wandering by and say, oh, something's wrong here, and, you know, I'm going to go to the process of finding the right person to inform that there's a problem so that they can fix it, which we all know that that's not the most obvious process out there. Mm-hmm.
So help me out with one thing. Let's talk about the naming of these things. So this is the Intel, the one we just did, the NUC 9 Pro, but we had to do / Quartz Canyon because, you know, that's your code name. And then, I'm not sure I love this, it's the NUC9VXQNX. Help me out with this. You've got the code name, you've got the product name, and then your SKU names or your model numbers can be a little bit unclear necessarily to the untrained eye. Can you help decode some of that for me?
We just want to make sure you really want a NUC.
So you're qualifying the buyer. Okay. All right.
No, I'm just kidding.
I know.
No, it's a fair question. And I think, you know, we've actually expanded our product line substantially over the last year and a half. And honestly, I think our code names are fine, but our product names probably haven't kept up with it. And one of the things that we're working through right now is, if we're limiting ourselves in the number of like major categories, we may be finding that we're using the same naming in different places, and it's just getting a little confusing. So it's actually something we probably need to spend a little more time on, unless we want to convince everybody to use the internal code names, which we all prefer.
Well, they're more fun anyway,
exactly.
But you know, but then when you go to the Intel site, if you want more info, and it's the NUC 9 Extreme Kit or the NUC 9 Pro Kit, is there any sense to the model numbers? So if I'm looking at a 9i7qnx, what is that telling me?
All right. So it says NUC i9?
9i. Well, this one, I'm just looking at the website, but it could say anything. 9i9qnx is another one. What? Is there a special ring to help sort that out?
There's a whole bunch of tricks to it. So part of it's going to be which processor it is. So the Nook 9 is the ninth generation processor.
Okay.
And then if it says i9, it's obviously an i9.
I'm with you so far. All right, now help me on QNX.
I think that's the quartz one. So that's the...
Okay.
So then you're talking the Xeon. There's also codes in there as far as if it's bulk. So if it's, ships in quantities of 5, or if it's not bulk, so if it ships in quantities of 1. There's a lot in the naming structures.
Yes,
I'll send you a decoder.
Yes. Well, I mean, so that goes back to, though, your sense of flexibility and wanting to give your partners what they want. You've got, just on the site now, 45 results for different kits and that sort of thing. And
I forgot, different cords, right? So there's also different geos that get different cords. So one of the codes, I'm not sure if the one you're looking at has it or not, but on the end, there's a number which tells you, does it come with a cord or does it not come with a cord? And if it does come with a cord, which country does that cord correlate to?
I'm somewhat regretting asking the question at
Are
this
you?
Point.
I would have I beat you into submission yet?
I kind of prefer my ignorance. Thank you very much. That's good. So let's get out of here. How is the distribution working for these? I know you guys have a lot of standard retail distribution, and then you've got some, VARs and partners and that sort of thing, other distributors. What does that look like? Are you seeing a lot of, I know you don't spend a lot of time on the end user side of it, but what's the distribution look like there? Do you have any visibility into that?
So we have distribution partners in each geo that then partner with the VARs and the systems integrators and the MSPs to make available the Nooks to them for their use cases, right? So if you're a system integrator, for example, that wants to get a Nook, if you're a big guy, we're probably talking to you, so we know exactly what types of products you want, and we're trying to build the right product for you. And then we have specific distis that they'll know. Okay, Intel works through these distis. They call them up. They say, okay, hey, I know Intel's supposed to have the Nook 9 Pro available. I would like to buy a quantity of 2 because I know that's the minimum I can buy. And they say, yep, no problem. We'll make it available to you. So then the system integrator will receive the product and build to the order that they've got. In some systems integrators views, they have a system configurator where they have a end user facing website where you can go in and say, okay, this is what I want. I want an Intel Nook 9 Pro. I want to have it with this much storage, this kinds of graphics, ship it to me at this address. And that'll be the end of the experience from their standpoint, right?
And I suppose it depends on the buyer as to what they're getting from you, because you've got the complete systems in the PC category. Then you've got the kits, which are, those are tunable, right? Or mostly configured.
So we call the kits are generally an L, quote unquote, L6. So they've got no storage yet. They don't have the memory yet, but they do have the CPU, the chassis, et cetera, right? Ready to go. But then you kind of, decide what system situation you want to have. What OS, okay. Right? Because for commercial, we actually do qualify Linux as well as the Windows solution. Mm-hmm. So in the commercial world, you get to choose that OS.
Right. So in the mini PC version, all done, you get Windows there.
Right. And then either Pro or Home, depending on which product line.
And then the kits, you can sort of choose your own adventure. And then I know you talked about Elements, but and maybe I just want to revisit that for a moment, but you also sell the boards by themselves and then these Elements things. So how do you discern between those two things?
That world's a lot more complex. In that world, right? Because you needed more complexity. I'm sure we've got some really complicated names to go with it. So in that world, we've got a lot of different choices for our customers. So they can choose an Austin Beach, which is a chassis, which, you know, is complete with a heatsink, everything you kind of need once you add the Element, because the Element will come with, if you buy at the low end, Celeron Pentium comes with storage. If you buy up in the core world, it comes with memory as well as the Wi-Fi. And then you just plug it all in together, add your OS, and away you go. But you have to buy both pieces separately because you choose what level of compute you want in that Element. So you may want an Austin Beach, but you, you know, sometimes you want to just put a Celeron in it because you're going to run some really simple signage. Maybe you want to put an i7 vPro in it because you're putting in some dynamic content and you want to put it, you know, the system somewhere where it's going to be challenging to reach without, you know, truck rolls and ladders and other exciting things. So you have to buy those two different pieces. What we're also doing is giving customers some building blocks. So folks can buy things like Butler Beach, which is just an assembly with the thermal solution that you can then build around your own experience. So we've got some customers that have created, ODMs who have created chassis that go around the Butler Beach. So if you wanted to have a really pretty desktop solution for your home, you could go and buy from some of our partners and then go and get your Elements depending on what level of compute you want there.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. I know we've spent a lot of time talking about what you've done at the high end of the portfolio. Is there a compelling reason to do more further downstream, something that's, I know you certainly have some more affordable options, but something that's more targeted at, you know, Raspberry Pi type audience, or is that too far afield from where you guys want to be?
Honestly, it's a little challenging for us to go that low right now, just given Intel's CPU roadmap is targeted more at a higher area. You know, Cherry Trail was a good product for us to look at those kinds of options for. We've done things like the Compute Stick, but that product line isn't as complete as it has been in the past. We are looking at, are looking at, you know, do we want to continue to do those 6-watt type solutions or not, but it's not currently been an area that the Nook team's been investing in.
Yeah, it's just hard to tell, I think, sometimes where, you know, where your innovation is useful, and maybe at that low of a price point, it's not quite as compelling or beneficial as the capabilities that exist in the higher end.
It gets harder CPUs to pay for the NRE when you're selling them for, you know, sub $100.
So now that you've had all this time with Nux, and I know obviously we've gone through an unexpected shift in worker profiles and locations, but what's your takeaway as you sit here today in terms of, you know, where the business is, what you expected or didn't expect over the last, well, really since the launch of the 9, I'm sort of curious if that plus the other dynamics have shifted the way you guys are thinking about the Nook business.
It hasn't actually shifted the way we're thinking about it. It's interesting depending on the week. The market is either optimistic or pessimistic, but it doesn't.
Sometimes both at the same time.
But we haven't really changed our general stance. We continue to really believe that the Nook product line has a huge opportunity to go into the market. And the customer base in aggregate remains positive, right? So while we all have bad weeks, try to avoid the press these days, it does continue to look really positive for the Nook team and the innovations that we're delivering.
Well, I know we're having a lot of fun with them. Just the chassis, the way they're intended, and then finding things like ESXi where they're maybe less intended, but have all sorts of fun use cases. And we're thrilled to keep playing. So you guys keep sending them, we'll keep playing with them and find some great use cases and fun projects. So I certainly appreciate you taking the time and joining us today. I think this has been a fun walk down the Nook memory lane, and then with a little glance to the future, which is good fun. And we're looking forward to it and can't wait to see what you guys come up with next.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to hearing more innovative ideas on how to use our products.
We'll send you a list.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank Kristen again for being on the podcast. Great conversation. We're so excited about what Intel's done with the NUC platform and the capabilities those guys continue to drive out of them. Make sure to hit us up, info@storageview.com, open to your thoughts and suggestions on podcast guests and everything else you want to see coming out of our operation, which in fact is creating even more content than usual. We've got a lot of great stuff going out on Instagram now. Keep in touch there, Twitter, Facebook, @StorageReview, pretty much everywhere, all the platforms. Thanks for your support. We appreciate it. Until next time, bye-bye.